Yo, what's happening, everybody? It's your boy, Earth Mac, the Mad Scientist.
And it's your boy, Boogie Blends. Welcome. It is Thursday night. It is time for some nerd talk.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Nerd talk.
Woo. Bro.
Yeah, yeah. Some shit done went down this day, ain't it?
Yes. Yes, it did. Yes, it did. Yes, it did, man. To the listeners out there, go ahead and hit that like button. Hit that notification bell. Do not forget to comment. You know, like, subscribe. Do all those things that you like to do for more content such as this. If you like this layout that we have, because this is a brand new layout here. This is different than the other live shows that we've done. You know, we was talking offline about this layout that we have and see if it's actually, see if you're digging it. If you're digging it, we digging it. And that's what it is, man.
Wait, can we show them? Can we show them the other one real quick, or no? Can we let them choose? Can you do that midstream?
I think we can. I really think we can.
Let's see.
All right, let's see what we got here.
See what they think.
So, for one of them, it was this right here, this side.
Yeah.
And our overlay was looking like more like this.
Yeah. Nah,
yeah.
You know? I get more Earth Mac right here. I appreciate that. You know what I mean? I appreciate that.
And then of course, you got this one right here. And this noise, you know.
Yeah.
Which I do appreciate that layout. Now, speaking of layouts, I know you see some things right up in here. Things look a little busier than usual, because typically it's not that busy up front. But just like the thumbnail said, you know, we learned about the most recent passing of Akira Toriyama, and we're going to honor him on this show today. And I got some Dragon Ball things, and obviously my boy Vegeta, favorite character right here, Piccolo, guard the Dragon Balls, of course, and King Vegeta over here. Now, you don't see King Vegeta every day, so when I saw him at the convention, like that was a must cop.
Mine.
Easily.
Take my money. Yeah.
Easily.
King Vegeta was that dude, bro. I mean, like, you know, it's not like he had like this major part in the series or anything like that, but you know, you got to respect his presence and what led up to Prince Vegeta.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Nah, but it was dope. But you know, was that?
He was a little, I ain't gonna hold you. I do like King Vegeta. You know, he do look like, his son do look like him, just like him. He had a little bit of cruelty about him, but when Frieza came around, you know, in front of Frieza, you know, he was a little bitch. But, you know.
Yeah, he did bitch up. He did bitch up, didn't he?
Yeah, you know, he.
Tail tucked between his damn legs, bro, literally.
Yeah, like literally.
Literally.
I mean, he tried to sneak her. You know, he tried to, I keep thinking Frieza's a her, but it's not. But, you know, try to sneak Frieza, but end up dying in the process, and you know, the rest is history. But
sometimes you gotta take an L, bro.
It is what it is, man. But you got some notes on Akira Toriyama, so we're gonna start with that. So, what you got?
Yes, you know, legends, they never truly leave us, right? Their work becomes etched in time, their influence ripples through generations, and yet there's still a profound sadness as we say goodbye to Akira Toriyama. His stories, his characters, they shaped us, right? Their creator is not too far gone, and his influence is very, very heavy in the new series, Dragon Ball Daima.
Yeah.
Which is supposed to be an original story based somewhere in between Dragon Ball Z and Dragon Ball Super. Right, because we know Dragon Ball GT, Akira Toriyama wasn't really involved in like that, and people, you know, there's a lot of there's a lot of opinions about GT in that regard. So the fact that he was so heavily involved in this upcoming series is comforting.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, it is. Well, like GT, you know, he didn't have his hands on that, and for the most part, most of us didn't give a damn about GT. And he was like, this ain't Akira Toriyama. And then we realized it really wasn't. And I bought GT just by proxy because, like, I always wondered what's going to happen. You know, I was more concerned with Vegeta and everybody else. Goku, But as it further progressed, I'm like, this story is, it don't, it's not the same. It don't hit the same as Dragon Ball Z. Mm-hmm. And then when I realized, when Akira Toriyama said, that's not canon, I literally chucked that thing in the woods, man.
Forget this shit. This shit trash. I can say it loud and proud now. The fuck? The fuck is this?
Like, what is this garbage?
This garbage.
This dumpster trash.
Juice. Yeah, literal poop. It was, man. Poop. Butt poop.
Poop disc.
It was poop disc. But I think you know, they talked about, like, even down to the machinery that they use in this new series is all designed by Akira Toriyama. They say art is supposed to be off the chain, and it's supposed to be something like we haven't seen before, which is great that they say that based off of Dragon Ball Super, because I thought that the animation of Dragon Ball Super was kind of tight.
It was. So when it came down to Dragon Ball Super, I was a fan of the rich animation. I mean, you know, some people be nitpicky and they pick out like certain little holes in animation and they blow it up and they just put it on the internet. Now, I will say I miss the grittiness of animation like Dragon Ball Z is. Cause in honor of Akira Toriyama, I'm rewatching Dragon Ball Z. Like, I'm in the Saiyan saga and I'm not too far in yet. I'm just looking at the training, and the last episode I'm on right now is the Pendulum Room, where the Z Fighters win the Pendulum Room to fight, you know, two Saiyans, and they realize how strong they were.
Mm-hmm.
So, but there was a certain level of grittiness to it. Like, holes was getting punched through you. Like, your hair was getting lopped off. Like, it was blood.
That's true.
You know what I mean? So,
right.
With Super, the animation is tight, but the grittiness of it, like the violence of it.
Right.
It's not there.
But, which it should, because motherfuckers is blowing planets up, bro.
Yeah.
It should be a little bit more messy.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Yes. It should be. Yeah, I didn't even think about that, but you're right. Because and Super, it wasn't even like, there wasn't even blood like that.
It was bruised up, and you know, there was blood there. But I will say, though,
like some on the nose or the mouth type shit, you know what I mean? Little scrapes with a little bit of blood on type shit. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Now, it did shut Crunchyroll down, though. Like that episode where Goku reached Ultra Instinct.
Yes,
against Jiren. I mean, you couldn't watch that shit first day. Like, forget about it. He was done.
That shit was dope, bro.
Yes.
That was a great fight.
It was.
Whole Jiren Goku fight, like from the beginning to the end. At first I was like, bro, this power leveling shit is weird, bro.
Yeah.
You know, but like by the end of it, that shit was fire.
Well, and then on top of all that, it wasn't really truly Goku that did it, because he had help. You know, Frieza, Android 17. And Vegeta, really, because Vegeta gave this man a pep talk. Like, listen, bro, I did what I had to do. Here's my last bit of energy to you. Don't fuck this up.
Like, Vegeta's character development is top notch, bro.
It is.
Ain't nobody in the series got better character development than Vegeta.
Yeah, well, Piccolo. I will say Piccolo. Piccolo and Vegeta's in the same lane.
But he's been solid from the start.
Oh yeah. I mean,
Piccolo been solid from the start. You know what I mean? Like, he'll, you know, he gets stronger, and you know, he shares a lot of wisdom and stuff like that. And
yeah.
But I think in terms of like his character becoming almost like a different soul.
Yeah.
I guess in a way, I don't really know how to explain it, but I feel like Vegeta takes that. It sure as hell ain't Gohan. That'd have been great. But it sure as hell wasn't him.
So here's what I learned about Gohan, right? Akira Toriyama, from what I was reading, like with certain reports and stuff like that, is that he resonates well with Gohan, with the glasses and everything. If you really look at Gohan, the adult Gohan, like in his study with glasses on, that's Akira Toriyama.
Yeah, damn, bro. And
so he put a lot of his... You know what I'm saying? Blew your mind, right?
Shit. Oh shit.
Blew your mind, right? Crazy.
I'll never unsee that.
Never unsee that. You can never unsee that.
That's fucked up, bro. That's crazy.
Wild, right? It is, his favorite character was Piccolo. And from what I understood, from stuff I was reading about him and Vegeta, like, Vegeta wasn't supposed to be here this long. Like, it was supposed to really end with Gohan.
Right. And that I knew.
Yeah, it's supposed to end with Gohan, but Vegeta wasn't supposed to be it, but the fan base kept Vegeta in, and that's how we got this character development. No, I feel like no one stacked more bodies than Piccolo and Vegeta combined.
Yeah, like, I mean, there's no. How do you get rid of Piccolo though? Yeah, I mean, I mean Vegeta. How do you get rid of Vegeta? It's impossible. Is that who you did? You say Vegeta? You said Vegeta, right? He wasn't supposed
Vegeta,
to stick on.
Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy talk, bro. Because everybody, everybody got their ace. You know, Gon got Killua. You know, Naruto got Sasuke or whatever. You know what I'm saying? In every end, everybody got their ace.
Yeah.
You can't. Come on, bro. That shit.
Hey, dead ass, man.
That would have hurt, bro. That is, damn, that'd have been crazy. What?
So now, okay. When we go back and look at Dragon Ball Z, Goku and Vegeta fought one-on-one. And this is all factual. Goku never truly beat Vegeta one-on-one. He never did it. Like,
what
Vegeta
do you mean truly beat? What's truly beat me?
Like, one-on-one, no interference. Like, okay, Vegeta got the first dub. See, one of my former co-hosts, he did the little battles and he split heads here. He was like, well, Vegeta won the first round and then Goku won the second round. Now, no, the entire fight, if overall battle, the first battle that they had, Vegeta won, he crushed this man's legs. He was like, well, he cheated. He turned to an eight. That's his ability. Don't Goku have the spirit bomb? They can kill this man?
He do.
Now, it took Krillin and Gohan to help Vegeta out. I mean, to help Goku out.
Help Goku out.
And Krillin was supposed to be the one to kill Vegeta anyway because he was about to stab this fool.
He was.
And then Goku like, no, don't do it.
The only time that Vegeta really, I mean, he did fuck him up in that first fight. He did fuck Goku up in that first fight.
Yes.
But the only other time that Vegeta had the upper hand on Goku, was when Babidi got a hand of him and he was, you know, Majin
Vegeta.
Vegeta.
Yeah. Yeah, he said he was tired of
when
being
Goku
baby.
Went Super Saiyan 3. Yeah, or baby.
No, it was Babidi. But he was just tired of being, like, hand-holded and, you know, he even grew a family and all that stuff. And then some people fight with that. They were like, well, he had Super Saiyan 3. Did Goku use Super Saiyan 3? That's
no.
His fault.
He didn't. He didn't use Super Saiyan 3, but he also just, like, dipped out so he could go fight Boo.
Yeah, you know, he got his ass rocked. Yeah, because of it. Vegeta did that double.
Boom! Yo, embedded him in the rocks, bro.
He said, there, look at this man.
Damn.
Like, nah, this ain't your time. This ain't your time.
Yeah. God damn.
I mean, as many times, like, Vegeta been in battles or whatever the case may be, and, you know, he lost some. He got his arms broke by 18, which that's always a staple. And all that stuff. He let Cell get perfect. Mm-hmm. And all that. You know, okay. Now, as far as Akira Toriyama, like, there's other characters that he drew. Like, he drew Dr. Slump. Dr. Slump was, like, one of his first creations, and then Dragon Ball really took over. He did artwork for Chrono Trigger. Like, which
classic. Classic.
Akira and Chrono Trigger, man. Like, I knew immediately where this art came from. Immediately.
Right.
And then, if you look at Dragon Quest anime... Okay,
that's Akira Toriyama. He stamped all over that bitch.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that animation just reminds you. So with Chrono Trigger, to this day, is like one of the greatest, if not the greatest RPG of all time. Like, straight up. You know what I'm saying? It was the first to have multiple endings, depending on the decisions that you made at the first part of the game and throughout, which was wild. So. And there was some characters that Akira even forgot about. Like, you remember Launch?
No, I don't actually.
So she was the chick that when she sneezed, her hair changed color.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He even admitted, he said, I forgot about it.
Imagine that, bro.
Yeah.
Imagine being so iconic that you make some shit up that you just, oh shit, I forgot that. Like Lil Wayne. Remember, they'd be like, yo, Lil Wayne, listen to this bar. You know who said that? He'd be like, nah, who said that? That shit fire.
Yeah.
You said that. He said, oh, shit.
Like, damn.
Damn, I said that? Damn. You know, so you're nice, you know, when you forget, you know,
yeah,
pieces like that.
Yeah, it's like, because Launch, like, fell in love with TN. Like, you can tell. Like, if you look at the uncut version, because, you know, when we were subjected to the Toonami version, we didn't see Launch. They skipped that part. I mean, she was coming from robbing a bank. She cooked Chow Su and TN some food.
Mm-hmm.
TN went to go train. And Krillin shows up and say, hey, Kami want us to go train or whatever. And whatever the case may be. You know, and TN say, hey, go to Kami's house. Go hang out there for a minute. And then that, you see bits and pieces of her. And like when TN died in the Saiyan Saga, you see her at the bar drinking because she was depressed that TN died.
Mm-hmm.
But she was a large part in Dragon Ball too. So that was my first introduction. And when you talk about the power of Akira Toriyama in Dragon Ball, you can honestly say it's you know, arguably, he brought anime to the U.S.
Oh, yeah. I'm with you on that. I mean, because before that, I can't remember. I mean, not that there weren't other animes, right? Obviously, there were other animes, but I don't think they were mainstream. I think they were reserved for a very specific community who actively sought anime, right? Yes. And then, so bringing Dragon Ball Z to the mainstream was like, oh shit, I gotta find something else that's like this too. You know, something else that's like this too. And then eventually, you know, maybe they get into like, you know, maybe they break away from shonens and they get into like slice of life animes and these sports animes.
Yeah.
And you know, it opened the door for the U.S. Crowd to watch anime. I totally agree with you there. I will say, though, I'm curious because I know this new series coming up, Daima is like the characters turn into kids. Like in some like universe or some shit. Like some kind of
standalone
blip in the Matrix happened and shit, and now they're all kids and they're trying to reverse it type shit.
Yeah.
That sounds kind of crazy, bro. I ain't gonna hold you, but I'm gonna trust Akira Toriyama's judgment on this.
Yeah.
And as involved as they say he was, you know, and you know, I'm really looking forward to watching it.
Yeah, like
that's a weird concept though, bro. Don't like, am I weird for that? You think I'm weird for that?
No, not at all. Because, so, the impact Dragon Ball had on us, like, because Dragon Ball itself didn't really resonate with the U.S. Dragon Ball Z did. So, we was introduced to the middle first, and then we started seeing, oh, shit, there's a prequel to this. Let's go watch Dragon Ball and you know, everything else in between. So, that branched out into Team 4-Star on YouTube with Dragon Ball Abridged. Dragon Ball Z Abridged, like with voiceovers or whatever, which Chris Sabat is like a fan of, or whatever case may be. So the impact, right? Then on top of that, you got Dragon Ball Tenkaichi and all these Dragon Ball Z video games that was for SNES and PlayStation up till now. Mm-hmm. And you got Sparking Zero, which is coming out soon, which everybody's going to be copying that because...
Oh, my God. I can't wait.
Everybody's going to be copying that. And then... Even with me personally, like, I've met and befriended at least 40% of the cast from Dragon Ball Z. Like, the voice actors from Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah.
Like, personally talking to them on the phone or help booking them for certain conventions or whatever. Like, it was just a wild concept. Like, Cynthia Cranch, she's voices Chi-Chi. And she sounds just like Chi-Chi. Like, she
bro, you know what's funny? You bring her up, and you know what I always remember is when we was at work.
Yeah.
When me and you were working together, right? We were at work and I was doing some forms or something like that. And you came out the locker room and you said, Josh, come here. So I was like, so you brought me to the locker room and you handed me the phone and you said, say, what's up? And I said, hello. And then as soon as she started talking, I was like, Chi-Chi? She was like, hi. I was like, yo, she crazy, hey, yo. And then I remember I had to go get Lee, Victor.
Yeah.
And then he came in. Yo, he was starstruck, bro. That dude almost started crying. But yeah, I know you got like, I know that you've interviewed a lot of them before and have like somewhat of a personal relationship with some of them.
Yeah.
That's dope.
It's craziness, man. And again, like the impact, even Oda, like Ichiro Oda, the One Piece creator, shouted out, like drew like custom artwork for Dragon Ball characters because this man is iconic. It's so much. I think one of the things that people was concerned about, like, you know, the Super going to end abruptly. And I don't think it is. Like, I think it's going to finish.
That was my next point.
Right. I think it will finish. I think that Akira is so smart that he ought to wrote the ending to this. He ought to know how this thing is going to end. And, you know, he was 68. You know, he was 68 years old. And I think with most manga creators, if they feel like, you know, something's coming, I have to feel like, okay, this is the ending for it. Because from what I was always taught is that you write the ending first and then you write everything else that leads up to it.
Right.
And
that's interesting too, because Dragon Ball Super is a manga also, yes. Right? Yes. Daima is not.
No.
This is completely original. There's no manga preceding this whatsoever, right? So when you think about, he had the time to finish Daima, which is great, because there's no manga, there's no source material for that, you know.
No.
And I think you're right. I think that the Dragon Ball Super manga is obviously like way far ahead, and I do think that there's something in the works, and it probably is finished. Abruptly though, like possibly.
I don't know either. It's in his final. I feel like it's getting in his final arc because, spoiler alert, within the manga, right? The most recent movie, Dragon Ball Super Hero, and Gohan is the focal point, and you see Gohan reach a new form.
Mm-hmm.
And Gohan calls it Super Saiyan Beast, and this is like different. Piccolo got a new form, like he turns like an orangish color and bulky. So in the manga, Goku, Vegeta, and Broly catches wind of this. Goku goes sees Gohan, hey, come with me, like let's bounce. Oh, Goten and Trunks, you come too, since you know doing superhero shit. So basically. Mm-hmm. Goku and Gohan are sparring right
You're
now.
You're doing superhero shit.
They were. Okay, yeah, you remember Great Saiyan, man, right?
So, yeah. No, I get it. It's just funny. Since y'all doing superhero shit, man, get your ass in. We out.
We out. In like instant transmission. Get in the car. You know.
Right. Get it.
That's what that Goku did. Like, oh, you busy?
Get your ass in the car.
get in the car. He going to Beerus Planet.
We out. Yeah. That shit's fun.
And so, you know, Goku and Gohan is fighting right now, and Vegeta's watching, Broly's watching. You know, they're just watching this fight go on. So that's where we're at in the manga. I feel like this will be the final story arc, like, going forward. But I think the people that he's surrounding himself with are familiar with his art style. So, you know, will it be exactly the same? I don't know. It won't be exactly the same, because we know... You know, Mr. Toriyama is no longer with us. But just like with Berserk, like, you know, with the passing of the manga artist for Berserk, like, we want Berserk to end because Guts dealt with so much tragedy in his life. Like, we got to see it through. We got to see the end. It can't just end. So, with Akira Toriyama, the story is so long and vast, the Dragon Ball, we can't just see it just stop. Like, we gotta see an ending to this. Like, what happens with Vegeta? Do he become the god of, you know, the god of destruction?
The god of destruction, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? What happens with Broly? You know, Black Frieza is hanging out here. Black Air Force energy, and you know.
Ski masked up.
Like,
he's ski masked Frieza, yeah.
Straight washed Goku and Vegeta, like that. It was like, and Frieza is really, okay, here's a question. Before we jump into the next subject.
Yeah.
Who do you think is the greatest villain in Dragon Ball?
Villain?
Yeah. Or Dragon Ball Z?
Do you mean like the best for the story, or do you, are you talking about like the strongest? Like
with, not the strongest, just
okay. I say honestly, Frieza.
Yeah.
Because Frieza's been there from the beginning.
Yes.
From the beginning, and has constantly just been a heel. Like, he's always in some bullshit. He's always in that shit. You know what I'm saying? And from the beginning. So it gotta be like not even close. Frieza. They didn't kill everybody else, bro.
Yeah.
But Frieza is, he's been on point.
Frieza has definitely been on point. Frieza, even when Frieza wasn't around in the first episode, Frieza's presence was felt because the Saiyans were still doing the dirty work.
Right.
And starting with Raditz, you know, with his dialogue and Vegeta trying to get up from under Frieza's, you know, thumb. And the lore of Frieza and the reason why Goku is on Earth, the reason why Raditz and Vegeta and Nappa are the only surviving Saiyans, and Broly, actually, surviving Saiyans on Earth. Frieza started all that. He did all that shit.
He did all of that. Yeah, he did.
You know what I'm saying? So, and then the fact that this man hasn't trained a day in his life, when you first meet him on Namek, a day in his life.
That's savage, bro.
Savage. And
that's not even close, bro.
Right. Goku was training to fight this man. Mm-hmm. And he had to go Super Saiyan and still barely scrape through. Didn't even kill him. So until Trunks took
care
of
that shit. And then Super, he showed up, and it took two of them to do anything to this man.
Well, that Goku stupidity right there. Like that's Goku stupidity.
They were trying to flex a little bit and they got caught. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And that's true. But still though, still Goku, bro. And that's still Vegeta. At the end
Vegeta
of the day.
Vegeta was ready to watch this man. He had his hands like out. He like, I'm about to blow your ass the fuck up right now. I ain't got time to be playing around with you. You going to hell. Easy.
Yeah.
And then Frieza cheated and like blew up the planet. Like right at that moment. Like, but Vegeta wasn't messing around. Goku, however, was. Vegeta was like,
facts. That's facts.
We weren't doing this. Like,
No.
He was like, yo dumb ass, what paying attention to this? And how you a Super Saiyan Blue get shot in the back? Like, come on, bro. Come on, man.
That's a good question, bro.
You know?
Yeah.
You guys shot in the back. But it's a lot of funny moments in Dragon Ball. I think Vegeta is some of the centerpiece of some funny moments. Piccolo is too. Like, Piccolo's a grandpa, man. That's who he is. He's a grandpa.
Facts, like, bro. And Akira Toriyama will definitely be missed, bro. And, you know, just his presence in the community itself, you know, and what he's done for it, it will be very, very much missed, but never forgotten.
Indeed, man. And we're going to jump into some more news, and that is John Bernthal. And he's teasing the return of the Punisher in the MCU. Now, it's been said by CBR.com that on February 11th, the actor posted a captionless image of the fictional children's book, One Batch, Two Batch, on his Instagram page. Fans of Netflix Daredevil series will remember that the in-universe children's book was favorite of Castle's daughter, Lisa.
That was the story that she used to pick every night for Frank to read to her before bed, before she got, you know, clip. Yeah, she got clip.
And when Bernthal currently filming Daredevil Born Again, it's possible that the book could reappear in the upcoming Disney Plus series. So it's already been confirmed that the Punisher will show up in the new Daredevil series. I cannot wait, because
you think he'll get his own standoff, his own standalone, another one?
That's a good question. That's a really good question. Echo did, and Echo was TVMA, and
yeah,
I feel like Daredevil will be in that same vein. I think with Echo, that was testing the waters. It was dipping their toe in the water with that.
Mm-hmm. And no, I get it.
Just to see how people react to it. But since Disney Plus has like a parental caption and all that stuff, you know, parental block, Mm-hmm. I think Daredevil going to be TVMA. I think they're going to do Luke Cage. I think they're going to do Punisher for sure. Because
they should do. Yeah. They should. And John Bernthal, he is the best of all of them. Because I know there was like the one that came out, I think, in like the early 90s or the late 80s or something like that. The
Dolph Lundgren?
Yeah. Dolph Lundgren. Yep. It was him. And then it was Thomas Jane, I remember, in the 04 one.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Ray Stevenson, I think, did the Warzone.
Yep. May he rest in peace. And
yes.
You know what? Low key, I really kind of like Warzone, man. Like,
Warzone wasn't bad. Wasn't bad. I did like that. I ain't going to hold you.
Yeah.
John just has this demeanor.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know. Like, I always look at him like, old boy from The Walking Dead, you know,
mm-hmm. which
Shane from The Walking Dead, you know, and I don't know, Ben, it's just like his face.
Yeah.
I guess it's got like pain in it. You know what I'm saying? It's just something, maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. I don't know. But I'm just saying, just something about his face is just like pain. You feel what I'm saying?
He's a hell of an actor.
I don't know, man. I like the way he looks. Huh?
He's a hell of an actor.
He is.
He's a hell of a dad.
He is.
But in real life, he's a real nice guy, man. I think he has like a show and he, you know, it's almost like therapy in a way, like certain people he talked to that like just break down to him and he sits there and listens. And yeah, my first, again, I think that was most people's first introduction to him was Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. And then we see him in The Punisher. Fury was another one I saw him in and did really good in Fury. He's also was in Wolf on Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
He was also in that too. So he got some range there. And
he does.
I agree with you. I feel like he is the best Punisher.
No doubt. And like, you know, and I think unlike the other ones, you know, John's version is more like it shows both the brutality, right? Yeah. And the deep-seated like pain that motivates Frank. You know, even though his actions remain like morally questionable.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like even though that's the case, like fans can still resonate with him because it shows like the violent, like brutal side of him, but it also shows like, you know, I wouldn't say vulnerable, but just like him and his emotions, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas the other portrayals of the Punisher, I feel like didn't show much of both. You know, it was just like, yo, this motherfucker a problem and he killing everybody.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think in the comics, man, he been through so many wars. Like Jigsaw is like one of the main villains that he had to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the funny thing about what a lot of people may not know about the Punisher in comic book form is that he has certain, he's not superhuman. He just has a lot of military training, unarmed and armed combat. He's almost at peak human strength. That, and I mean, he's hard to kill. And he has a skull outfit, and that's like a beacon for people to like to shoot at. And that's just like one of the most protected parts of his body.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you see something that just out there, you know, I guess you have a tendency to shoot it. But as far as telepaths, he has certain mental blocks to like stop people from like getting in his head and making them think crazy things. Because I think one of the things he said was, I've been through so much shit, you can't do nothing to me.
Right.
Like,
right.
It's like, it's nothing you can do to me that hasn't already been done to me. So
there's nothing you could do to hurt me worse than I've been hurt already, like, in my past. So like, let's get it.
Right.
That's a crazy mentality to
have. That's what that is,
right?
Like, it's, you know, he has some run-ins with Wolverine, survived. You know what I'm saying? Like, not many people fight Wolverine and survive or come out unscathed or whatever. You know, had run-ins with Blade and, you know, Spider-Man, obviously.
I forgot about Wolverine and a Punisher, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Yeah. They teamed up. They fought each other. There's some things to it, but I think the Punisher as a character, he's what people in like normal society will want to do, but they can't.
Mm-hmm.
In vigilantism, it does get him in a world of hurt, because who's to say that this person may not be framed? Like, you know, framed for something. Like, okay, so in Spider-Man the Animated Series, the Punisher was in there. How they was able to do this still amazes me to this day. And Blade, because both Blade and the Punisher was in Spider-Man the Animated Series. So how they did it was Blade had a laser sword. He didn't actually have a bladed weapon. Punisher had like different gadgets, like he had like laser pistols and rocket launchers, but he never had a physical gun. It was just like a laser gun or something like that. But he was hunting Spider-Man, but you know, he was being framed for something. He was the man spider. He didn't know what was going on. You know, he just said, I'm gonna hunt this dude and I'm gonna take him out. Like, no rhyme or reason until Kraven had to break it down to him, like, hey, yo, relax. This like time out.
Quit,
like,
bro, quit. Like, please.
Listen, this is, he can't help this shit right now. He got medicine to get him straight. Like, relax.
To get him back, to get him straight.
Like, we got to get him straight, man. Like, you know, he's not one of the bad ones. He didn't kill nobody. You know what I'm saying? But I do like Punisher as a character. I don't really have much of his comics like that. But John Bernthal playing him, I'm like, that's the best representation.
No doubt. I just
want more of the suit. Like, I want more of him being right. And doing
so what do you think is going to happen now that Disney has their hands on it? You know what I'm saying? Because that wasn't the case before.
No. I think they're going to overhaul his outfit like they did Daredevil. I like Daredevil's outfit.
Me too.
Echo. I dig that. And the fact he was using the billy clubs a lot more, because in the Netflix series, he wasn't using them as much.
Right.
It was really grounded, which I really have no issues with. But now that Disney has it, seeing what he could do with the billy clubs, because the billy club is like a part of him. And Daredevil have many costumes. He got the yellow and red. He got the all red and he got the black armor, which is my favorite one. But I think with the Punisher, with Disney having the rights to it now, I think you're going to see more of the White Skull and the bulletproof vest and him using, you know, doing his thing.
So, that's and that was the first thing I thought of too, is they're going to completely overhaul like his whole look, and that shit is going to be fire.
Yeah,
I don't know, man. Disney has, they have their strengths. You know what I'm saying? And I think that his character design and shit is definitely one of those strengths.
Definitely. Definitely. They do their thing, man. I'm going to have to give it to them. They do their thing when it comes to costume design for characters, man. I'm just curious on what they do with, you know what? I'm going to hold off on that, because that is the surprise. That's the new news that we found out. And we're going to do that last, but...
you got to wait.
We gotta wait on that. So the next thing we got is, are we finally getting a Ready Player 2?
Like, bro, I fucking hope so, bro. Let me tell you. Ready Player 1 is top 3 for me all time. That was a fantastic film, bro.
Yes.
Fantastic film. That story is so beautifully written.
Yes.
It is so beautifully written. The front, there are 3 or 4 storylines going on in this movie at the same time. And they all intersect.
Yeah.
And they all come to this, to the same conclusion. It is a mass. I loved it. And there were, like, you know, pieces from the book, and I know the audience, you know, like, preferred the book over the, I didn't personally read the book. I heard it was great, you know, but the film was amazing in classic Steven Spielberg fashion. Also, a lot of people don't know that. Well, I think a lot of people do know that he directed and co-produced the film.
Yeah.
And it brought like that 80s pop culture, like, theme to it, you know what I mean? And it was really dope.
Yes.
And to see them playing homage to a lot of the games that we used to play growing up, a lot of the shows that we used to watch growing up, it was really great to see that. It was like any person who's into like that nostalgic vintage thing, it was like their dream. Any gamer, but it's, and I think that's something that like low-key every gamer wants to do too, is to have an experience like that, but to have that story that the Oasis had and the creator had, it was his story plus their story. Mm-hmm. And Ready Player Two, I really, really, really hope that this comes out, bro.
Bro, I need to get the book. Like, I want to read the book. I haven't read it. Like, I didn't even know a book existed until after I watched the first movie, right? Same. And I was like, man, when I tell you it hits you in the nostalgic feels, like, this movie hits you in every nostalgic feel imaginable. Just like what Boogie was saying, with the games that we used to play. It wasn't even just the games. It was, like, the movie, the pop culture, like, the movies and series and, you know, to this day, like, watching this movie, I still find shit that I didn't find when I first watched the movie the first three or four times. It was like, yo, that's Duke Nukem over there. Like, yo, that's RoboCop right there. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's all this 80s stuff. And, you know, being a kid that was born in the 80s and grew up in the 90s, you know, the art of gaming grew with us. I think we was in the golden age of gaming. Like, I know people talk about, like, Atari and stuff like that, which is really the granddaddy, obviously, but Nintendo single-handedly saved video games and then branched us out in what we are. I mean, honestly, I think Ready Player One was set in 2025, if I'm not mistaken.
I think so. I think it was set in 2025.
Yeah.
Which is crazy, right? Because, like, I guess when they wrote the book, you know, like, they didn't know what it was going to look like, you know, or even if they did, like, the universe, you know what I mean? Like, it's whatever, but, like, yeah, 2025, that's next year, cuz.
That's next year. And then we got virtual reality stuff. We're not at the level of Oasis by any stretch, but it's like we slowly, like, getting to that point. Like, imagine if Oasis, something like the Oasis existed right now.
Well, I mean, why not, though? Why not? You have these MMORPGs, right, that are out there.
Yeah.
So, like, that platform is already out there. You got the VR headsets. You got the AR headsets.
Yeah.
You know, you got the suits. You got the sensors. You got the track pads. You know what I mean? Like, the running track pads. Yeah. All of those are things, like, real things that you can go purchase right now. Now, there's no, like, actual Oasis right now, but, like, everything that you would need for that
exists this
day. You know what I mean? Today
it's like, that's probably why I didn't get a VR yet, because it's not quite there yet for me. Like, I wanted to be at the pinnacle of what it is before I even pick it up and, like, get all the equipment for it. Like, I don't want to get it right now, because it's still in the early stages. But to what Boogie is saying, yes, all the equipment that you see on Ready Player One, it is this.
Yeah.
Like,
in some fashion, it's real. Yeah.
It's definitely real. Now, it says Steven Spielberg, who directed the first film of 2018, confirms his involvement in Ready Player Two as producer. Based on a novel of the same name by Ernest Cline, who adapted it to screen alongside Zach Pym. The sci-fi film is set in a dystopian future where people use the virtual reality simulation known as Oasis. Now, speaking to Showbiz 411 at Universal Pictures Gala at Soho House, Spielberg provided an update on his upcoming projects. The legendary director won't have anything in production in 2024. We're in discovery phase, trying to figure out what's next. However, Spielberg did share a Ready Player 2 update, confirming that he will be involved in the sequel as a producer. Now, as far as the, you know, what's going on with it, it says it's announced that a film adaptation was in the early stages of development, and despite Klein's comment coupled with Spielberg confirming his involvement, it hasn't officially received the green light from Warner Brothers. And Spielberg's involvement with Ready Player 2, even as producer, is still somewhat surprising, considering he has generally been averse to sequels throughout his illustrious career outside Indiana Jones and Jurassic Park. So,
you know, do you know the difference between the producer and the director? Do you know, like, what their jobs, like, consist of? Because I wonder, like, if going from director to, if that's going to create, like, any kind of shift, I guess.
I think as a director, you know, you're responsible for the hiring of the actors and getting them in place and everything else. Now, for a producer, I know that's different as far as like setups and, you know, what the vision is. And I think you work closely with the director. But I think since Spielberg is a director, one of the best directors we ever known.
Yeah, he's going to do both. Like, in one way. Yeah, right. Facts.
Yeah.
And whoever's going to be the director is probably going to be like,
all right,
that's Steven Spielberg. Who the fuck am I to say no? You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, you got it, OG. You got it. Yeah, whatever you need.
Yeah.
So, yeah, nah, I think you're right. I think that's really cool, man, because I think that vision that he brings is what made Ready Player One. So, because, again, like Toriyama,
you could
spot a Spielberg film.
Yes. You could definitely spot a Spielberg film.
You could spot a Quentin Tarantino film. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's just certain producers or there's certain directors, you know what I mean? That is just like, that's their thing. So I think having a role that's a little bit more elevated than a director, I mean, hearing that explanation, which I feel like is, I don't know. I think this shit is going to be fire, bro. After hearing that, I'm 10 times more excited than I was earlier.
Yeah.
And I can't wait.
Considering how Ready Player One ended with the main character having, you know, complete autonomy.
Right to
the Oasis. Even though he had, like, limits on how long people can stay in Oasis because of his life lessons and all that. Yeah, like what you said about knowing the directors by in their films, like Tarantino, he's obsessed with timelines. Like, he'll bring you back and forth and then get you to the current by the end of it. Like, give you a full understanding of what's going on. And it's vulgar, it's in your face, and it's always been that way.
Yeah.
Zack Snyder, obsessed with slow motion. That in his Zack Snyder film, it's going to have some slow motion in that bit. It's going to have it.
That's funny.
It's going to have it. Like, it's easy.
That's
like,
funny.
Dawn of the Dead has slow motion in that joke.
Like, yeah, you're right, bro.
Yeah. Like, Justice League, the Zack Snyder, the Snyder cut, slow motion in it.
That's
Rebel
crazy.
Moon on Netflix, slow motion.
Slow motion.
Yeah, that's his thing.
Good like, point. That's crazy.
Like, Spielberg have elements of a story where it's family oriented, but it's like hidden life lessons like taught in those, but at the same time it's like a spectacle, it's an adventure. Every Spielberg film feels like you in an adventure film, like you in the movie. And that's just what it is. But
I can't wait.
I need to get the book. I need to read Ready Player One and see what's the differences between the movie and the book. I'm gonna definitely read that from cover to cover. So I'm going on Amazon.
Me too. I definitely need to read the book. Need to read the book because, like, I have heard that it's way better. But you know how, like, when you read the book and then you watch the movie, you're like, the book is better. I wonder if it's the other way around. Like, if you watch the movie and that's all you could think about, and then you read the book and you're like, that's not how that shit go. even though you know the book came out first, you know, you're like, this shit ain't right. It's that bullshit.
Is that joke, man? Yeah.
Especially since I felt so passionately towards the movie. You know what I'm saying? Since I enjoyed the movie so much.
Yeah. You know,
but I keep an open mind, obviously. You know what I mean? And like, I definitely want to read the book. And I know you said earlier that it hasn't been given the green light by Warner Brothers, but I thought it has been confirmed. It's just like in its early, and it's still in its infancy.
Yeah, now Spielberg did say he's not working on anything in 2024. So if we're looking for it to come out in 2024, it ain't happening.
Oh, no.
Like,
there's no release date, casting, no director, I don't even think is announced yet, to be honest. Right. So, like, it's in its infancy, but, like, I think it is confirmed, bro. I think it's definitely coming out.
Oh, it's happening for sure. Like, when it get released, now that remains to be seen. Maybe. Yeah. I mean, they didn't even start filming yet, so I'm guessing 26, 27-ish, you know, with the visuals and everything else. Me, I'm a visual person, so to see all the stuff that was going on in Ready Player One, and I'm also a bookworm too, so you know, if you look at my bookshelf, I got so many different books. I stayed the piss away from Books A Million and Barnes & Noble, because every single time I walk in there, I always walk out with at least two books. At least two.
Books A Million always catches you with some shit.
It catches you. It robs you.
It pickpockets you. When I go there, too.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So,
I do. I buy Lego sets and dumb shit.
See?
I love Books A Million.
Bro, I bought a whole record player. A whole record player.
That's what I'm saying, though. You'd be like, fuck. You know you're spending money when you go in there, bro.
Like, what'd I just do, man? What happened?
Record player. That's
record player.
That's funny.
With that's records. Funny.
But do you think that the sequel is going to be able to capture, like, the same magic of the first film? Like, do you think the nostalgia factor is going to be able to be as strong? Because I feel like that's something that made, like, the first one so great. Like, do you, like, how much of that nostalgic factor is too much? And, that's like, you know what I mean?
That's a good question. I know back in the day, like, in the 90s, like, certain sequels of movies that we love, the second movie ends up being better than the first, like, to a certain degree.
Like the Terminator?
Like the Terminator, exactly. Judgment Day.
Better than the original Terminator.
I like Judgment Day. I'm a Sylvester Stallone fan through and through. Like, he's my favorite action star. But Judgment Day, to me, is the best action film, period.
Yeah.
Like, it had story. It had stuff blowing up.
Yeah.
And it made you tear up at the end with the thumbs up going in. I'm like, man, you killed my boy. You know what I'm saying?
Woo! Yeah.
A lot to process, you know what I'm saying?
I got to unpack. Yeah.
A lot to unpack. I will say Ready Player 2 has a tall order because one did. And even then, though, I think it has potential to be as good as one. Because even those Easter eggs that was in the background, you could just bring those Easter eggs to the forefront. Like,
I guess that's true.
Right.
I guess, like, that's true.
Like, have more Chucky bombs. you know what I'm saying? Like that have was people hilarious riding some, to me.
Have some people riding some chocobos.
Yo, see? Easy. So, you know what? Now that you said that, it has potential to be better than the first one.
Yeah.
It has potential to be better than the first one.
There's a lot of games that weren't touched. There's a lot of pop culture, like, between the 80s and 90s, and not all of it was shown, like, in there, you know what I mean? Or even the early 2000s, or even, like, present day, you know what I mean? Like, there's going to be a lot of references, a lot of cameos, and I agree. I think that Ready Player 2 is gonna be able to bring that same exact magic, because there's just so much source material.
Yes.
And Ready Player 2, obviously, is a book in itself already. Yeah. So they have that source material also. So I think going off of all of that, I think they have the ability to make something way better than Ready Player One.
No doubt about it. I'm like, what if they're like, they have to put in a code to get something, right? Like, you know, like we used to do back in the day, it pulled out like a Sega Genesis controller. You got to do, or Nintendo controller, down, stuff like that. Like, you can... There's some stuff that hasn't been that wasn't touched. I think we just hold Ready Player One close to the chest because it hit us in the feels. Like, I watched it today.
You watched Ready Player One today?
I watched Ready Player One today. So, because it's on Netflix. You know, it's on Netflix.
I watched it like a couple weeks ago. My fiance and I, we watched it like a couple weeks ago. And the whole time we were just like, this is such a good movie, bro. Like, this is a great movie. And she's not like a video game head. You know what I'm saying? Like, she likes that kind of stuff. She likes the old vintage stuff. She likes those 80s and 90s movies. You know what I mean? But she was just like, bro, this is such a great story. You know what I mean? And I completely agree. Everything about that movie was on point. And I cannot wait for Ready Player 2.
I can't either, man. It just... Don't let us wait too long, man. Shit.
Like, that's the type of time they be on, like, for the most part.
Yeah.
But for the right movie, I'm okay with that. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's not like Harry Potter where they just pump them movies out. You know what I mean? Or like The Lord of the Rings where you just start pumping them. But even then, like, there was some significant time in between, was it 2 and 3?
Yeah.
So I don't know, man. I'm willing to wait. I'm definitely willing to wait for Ready Player 2 as long as they fucking put everything they got into that shit.
Yeah, I like put everything because that these are the two books, one and two, and that's it. Like, mm-hmm. there's no player three. So, I really do like it. I mean, I probably soon as we finish this show, man, I probably ordered the books because on Amazon right now they have the books in pairs, so you can buy it like as a pair.
Oh, so you can get it on Audible then if they're selling it on Amazon.
Yeah, you can get it as an audiobook.
Audiobook or regular. I might do that.
But you know I'm a physical book type guy, but
Yeah.
Now I do have like Kindle and Marvel Unlimited if I want to read back on certain things. And also speaking of Marvel, man, some new news just dropped, man. Boogie Blends. I know I sent that to you right before we got on.
You did.
Right before
you did.
We got online, man. Mm-hmm. But check this out, man. X-Men, new X-Men comics is coming this summer, dog. Like, listen, Marvel's been cooking, all right? You got X-Men 97,
yeah.
I got to take back. So the X-Men 97, like, creator or showrunner, he was let go. He was fired. Like, before this show even aired, though. I was like, and someone said in the comments, it was like, typically when Disney do that to somebody, some stuff will come out in the future about them. And there's a reason. They're just getting ahead of it.
Right. Like, there's a reason behind it type shit.
Right. There's a reason behind it. But I don't want to say that it is because nothing has come out yet. But this ain't even the show. You got X-Men 97, which they just released a clip today, which you can check it out on YouTube and on Facebook, mm-hmm. where the X-Men was fighting the Sentinels. And bro, let me tell you, y'all know you seen it. Mm-hmm. Boy.
So what is it? There's three flagships now, right? There's three flagship comics?
So right now, X-Men, the mutants is in the Krakoan age. And
yeah, exactly. And that's like where the mutants were, like they had like their own, I guess, civilization where they like lived in unity, right?
Yeah, everybody lived in unity. You know, even some of the villains, you know, Apocalypse has his thing, Sinister had his thing, you know.
Yeah, it was like a sovereign nation almost.
Yeah, right. They had a governing body that they had representatives.
Right.
Like in the government or whatever. And then they had portals where they can go off planet, jump over. And Krakoa was a living organism. And, you know, they had council meetings. It was like Professor X, Magneto, Mr. Sinister, Apocalypse, Emma Frost, all in a council meeting or whatever, having talks about certain things or whatever. And it was just a harmonious thing. Obviously, during this age, this is like some of the greatest storytelling, you know, like in X-Men lore. But right now, they're going through a storyline called The Fall of X. So, with The Fall of X, like, this Krakoan age that we've been dealing with for the past few years is going to be over.
Yeah.
And so, they are relaunching X-Men, so they're going back to after the events of Krakoa. You know, mutants are being hated more than ever. So,
yeah.
From basically, it said, per CBR.com, from the ashes of the Krakoan age, Marvel announced a relaunch of X-Men titles. Now under the editorship of longtime Marvel editor Tom Brevoort, as a panel at South Southwest titled From the Ashes, the Future of X-Men Revealed. Three flagships, like you said, will be Uncanny X-Men by Gail Simone, X-Men by Jed McKay, and Exceptional X-Men by Eve Ewing and Carmen Carnero. Now, also, there's other titles like X-Force, X-Factor, Wolverine, NIX, Storm has her own title. Now,
So the X-Men, right, is supposed to be led by Cyclops.
Yes.
Right? And Beast and the others and Alaska.
Yes.
Right? Focused on the mutant business and philosophy, right? And there's mm-hmm. Uncanny X-Men. Right, which is, you know, Rogue, Gambit, and the crew in Louisiana.
Yeah.
Protecting, like, interests and more human-involved areas.
Yeah.
And then the Exceptional X-Men, which is, like, the ragtag group with, like, Kate Pryde predominantly featured, you know, and, like, facing off against new foes in Chicago.
Yeah.
So, like, each, like, they have, like, their different regions with different rogues that are kind of helping maintain whatever order that or whatever that they're doing.
Yeah. And if you go on CBR.com, and I will drop the link in the description below, for like certain things you can look up for you guys. There's a trailer out you can watch. for this. Uncanny X-Men will be the one that I'm really, really looking forward to in Louisiana. Notice that none of these groups are in New York.
Yeah. That's crazy to me. They're in some, they're like in the Midwest type shit.
Yeah.
Illinois, Louisiana. And then obviously there's Alaska, but like that, like that's still like, that's crazy. You don't see LA, you don't see New York, you don't see Atlanta, you don't see none of that shit. Miami, Houston, Louisiana. And I'm a huge Gambit fan. I love Gambit. And I know he's going to be over there in Louisiana.
Cooking it
up. You know, with Rogue. And I'm just like, I can't wait for that. Because Rogue, I fucks with Rogue, yo.
Yes.
Animated series Rogue. You know what I mean? I fuck with Rogue.
She doing her thing, man. X-Men is also, I'm interested in that too, because it got Beast, Magneto, like you said, Beast, Magneto, Psylocke, which is one of my favorite female characters, Juggernaut, which is part of the X-Men team. Mm-hmm. Now, I know Louisiana got Gambit, Nightcrawler, Jubilee, and Wolverine. Now, where Rogue is, I don't know. I feel like Rogue should be there for obvious reasons.
Rogue, I think Rogue will be there. I think I read something that Rogue was going to be over there with them in Louisiana.
Yes, matter of fact, I'm sorry, I misspoke. Rogue will lead the team of Outlaw Superheroes. She's the leader.
She's a lead. Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. It's crazy. Like, it's crazy how the end of that, you know, Krakoan era, and their decision to just branch everybody out. Like, what's going to be the impact of that?
So I'm thinking what's going to happen is whatever happened in the fall of Krakoa, it happened in New York, and it caused them to separate. And now at one point, you know, say if someone died in Krakoa, right? Mm-hmm. There's like some type of memory. I won't say memory chip or whatever, but you can get resurrected. Like there was you had an ability to be resurrected because Krakoa could do that, like with your memories and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it wasn't like if someone dies, it's like, I'm not so totally sad by that, because at some point you're going to go to this certain area in Krakoa and, like, you know, we're going to bring you back, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But now this is the fall of Krakoa. So this has ramifications. Krakoa was kind of like Dragon Ball in a way. But it was certain things that was put in play, like the stuff with Mr. Sinister, the stuff with, you know, Orcus, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's so many things that's happening. I've been watching Comics Explained, and shout out to the host for Comics Explained. And let me tell you something. Cyclops is a dog. You understand?
Facts.
Cyclops is a straight dog. And I was like, people don't understand because people watch X-Men animated series and
think he's soft.
Yeah, they look at him like he's soft or whatever, because the moment he got punched in the stomach by Wolverine, it was a wrap. You know, that's the first episode. And how uptight and Boy Scoutish he is. But he's a leader. He's supposed to be that guy. He's not supposed to be edgy or whatever case may be. In the comics, he killed Professor X. Like, he killed this man. His father figure. He killed him. So, there's something I'm reading right now called Deadly Genesis, and that was kind of like the start of the fall of Cyclops. His psyche is like, and you got the Messiah complex, because after a certain event, Hope Summers is supposed to be the new savior for mutant kind, and Cyclops is by any means necessary. He will sacrifice mutants to save Hope. That wasn't the old Cyclops. He Avengers versus X-Men, definitely about that life. When he took the ability of the Phoenix, and no one could stop this man.
Mm-hmm.
Like, ridiculous. He beat the Avengers. He killed Professor X. He did a short work with Wolverine. Nobody could touch this man.
Yeah, Cyclops, he's a dog, bro. And he's like, you know, yeah. And you're right. He never really got his flowers like that. And he's never really been, like, aside from the comics...
Yeah.
You know, yeah, in the cinematic universes anyway, he's like, he's never really been portrayed as like that tight. You know what I mean? Like he was always portrayed as the leader.
Yeah.
You always see him like wear his emotions on his sleeve. But like, you never see that dark, like kind of savage part of Cyclops, you know, and to see that in, you know, in the comics is great. And to see that moving forward is great too, you know, and it's cool because like, I know that Jed MacKay, he also had like a lot of success recently, right? Mm. With like, with Moon Knight, and Gail Simone's also with Birds of Prey and Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
So the creative team here is like, fire.
And rumor had it that they were trying to get Jim Lee to come back.
Yeah.
And but you know, he had obligations with DC because he holds positions with DC.
Oh, does he? Yeah. Yeah, that would be like a conflict of interest type of thing, wouldn't it?
It would. Well, I think considering his obligations, and I mean, it's going to be a little minute before he even like able to do anything X-Men wise. But if Jim Lee's name was on X-Men, not taking anything from the creators that's working on X-Men right now this summer.
Right.
Jim Lee's X-Men, that was in the 90s, that short run that he had, is like the best-selling, I think it's the best-selling comic book run of all time, I think.
Oh, is it? Yeah, that's crazy. I didn't know that.
Because of the artwork or whatever. Because in the 90s, there was a boom. And Jim Lee, the name escapes me, Tom McFarlane. Todd McFarlane, I'm sorry. And then, you know, there's other artists, and right now I have a brain freeze right now, but those core artists left Marvel, walked across the street and told DC, we're not coming to you either. We're making Image Comics and we're creating our own characters. So the best artist in the nation left Marvel and became the number two comic book company in the nation. Above DC and just right under Marvel. That's wild.
That is wild, bro. And I love to hear stories like that too. I love to hear stories that, you know, of people that really believe in their work and really believe in what they do and are passionate about it and go out and do it on their own and become successful at it, bro.
Yeah.
I love those stories, bro. I love those stories. And but you know, too, think about this, right? We got these three flagships that are coming out.
Yes.
Right. But like these are only core titles. Yes. Right? So more X-Men related books are likely coming.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Like these are just the core titles. I feel like there's gonna be a ton of more comics that are gonna come out within this series, I guess you would call it.
And it's gonna be stretched out. I mean, you know, we read that, you know, Storm, X-Force, X-Factor, Wolverine, NYX. Now it depends on how good those secondary comics are, but I think the core story will be the X-Men, like Uncanny and Exceptional and regular X-Men. Now, I can't let this die. So Image Comics, Eric Larson, Jim Lee, Rob Liefeld, Todd McFarlane, Wilkes Portasio, Mark Silvestri and Jim Valentino. Those were the founders of Image Comics. And it was founded in 92. And like when I tell you, people was lined up at the comic book store around the building by the thousands in line for a book, like autograph signing for like, it was crazy. Like Spawn, I think, is the longest running continuous comic book, I think, if I'm not mistaken, because they never like did a relaunch or start over. Everything that happened from book one, you know, leads up to what's going on now. I mean, there's some standalone stuff over here, but the correspond stuff, everything matters. It's like continuous.
That's dope too. I didn't know that either. I mean, I've always liked the Spawn comics and like always, but I always assumed that there were like spinoffs of it, you know what I mean, or different versions of Spawn, or a relaunch, or you know, an alternate universe Spawn, or type shit. I mean, I didn't know that
they have Scorched, which is like a team of Spawns, with Al being, I won't say a leader, but you know, it's kind of like a ragtag group of, you know, Hell Spawns and stuff like that. But this right here for X-Men, I'm really excited about that. Like,
yeah.
You know, it's something I will continuously read. And honestly, it's good for newcomers too. So if, you know, I can't imagine people being brand new to X-Men or whatever the case may be. But if you're trying to figure out a spot to start at, I think when these new comics come out in July, this is a good spot to start at, because obviously they're going to reference what happened, what led them up to this point, but you can get there. I think we started, me and you started reading comic books right at the midpoint. We started in the 90s.
Right.
Like, we didn't start reading X-Men in the 60s when it came out. So, you know, it is what it is at that point, but I'm excited about it.
I'm excited about it too. And not for nothing, like, I haven't, like, I was never, I mean, I was, like, when I was younger, like, I was really into comic books.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until you put me back on comic books when I was back at you know, on base and everything. That was when I got put back on to comic books.
Oh, yeah. Because it's some great stories, man.
They are some great, great stories, man. And I love hearing these adaptations of, like, I know a lot of people don't like it. You know, they like those canon stories and all of that shit. And I do too. I do appreciate those. I love the character development in them, but I always love creative thinking. You know what I mean? I love something new that we haven't seen before.
Yeah.
With somebody that we love. You know what I mean? I love that shit. And, like, I love the cameos. Those are always fun. The collabs. I could read those all day. And you put me back onto that.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Always here to help, man. And I know, lastly, before we get off, Helldivers 2 today, as of Pi Day. You know, happy Pi Day to everybody. I know I should have said that in the beginning.
Damn, it is Pi Day.
It is Pi Day. Happy 22 over 7 day. You know what I'm saying? That's what I said in my Facebook status. So Helldivers 2 dropped some new gear. You got some new weapons. It's called Cutting Edge. It's a Cutting Edge premium pack. You can actually pay for it, you know, for 1,000 super credits, and it's only $10. Or you can earn the super credits as you play the game and get up 1,000.
Exactly.
And still unlock it. So, which, obviously, shout out to the developers at Arrowhead.
Yes.
For that. Because you're giving us an option.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
yes, absolutely, bro. And to get 1,000 super credits doesn't take a super long time either. Nah. Like, you don't, you know what I mean? You could get it in a couple of days.
Yeah, you can buy the super credits with your war bonds. Well, I mean, the stuff that's on the pages. Like, you can buy them, add them up. And then you can find super credits out in the field while you're fighting. So you just have to go out and explore and stay alive.
Yeah. Every page, I think they give you like 100 super credits for, or they give you the option to purchase 100 super credits.
Yeah. Yeah. For you know, not for nothing, but it's you have the option. And I do love that you have the option to do that. And,
bro, the last time we had this show,
yeah,
I said, bro, I haven't played it yet.
Uh huh.
The next day, I text you. And I was like, bro, I'm on this. And you said, oh, you enlisted for democracy, huh? I said, bro, yes, I did. I'm with Super Earth.
Yes, sir.
And like I've been playing with my boys.
Yeah.
And that shit is so fun, bro.
Yes, it is.
That shit is so I'm having a blast with the Terminids. I love what they did. I love that they have the Terminids and they have the androids and
automatons.
The automatons. Yeah. And from what I hear, they're coming out with more too, as there's going to be different types of enemies, different type of monsters that's going to be coming out.
Yes.
And I cannot wait, bro. These mechanics are crazy. Bro, you be seeing me out there. Doop, 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 doop. You know what I mean? Just running it, bro. And I like all the everything, the way you can build your character for your fire team.
Yeah.
And the way that you can all support each other and like plan it out beforehand adds that new dynamic to the game.
Yes.
And the environmental stuff that happens, I know we touched on last time. Crazy work. Crazy work. The only thing that I'm currently having an issue with right now is the friend system. Are you having a problem with that too?
You mean like the friend code?
Well, kind of. I can't accept friends that are playing on PlayStation, any of them.
Oh, wait. You got cross play enabled?
Yeah, and so do they. And I even disabled it and re-enabled it, restarted it, all type of shit, and it's for some reason Like, so I can play with him if I join my boy who has PC.
Yeah.
And then my dude on the PlayStation joins.
Yeah.
We can all rock. And even if my man leaves, me and the dude that's playing on PlayStation are still in the same party and we can still rock. So okay. I know crossplay is working, but I can't send friend requests to PS5 people and I can't receive friend requests from PS5 people, and it's kind of pissing me off. And I was on Reddit, and there are a lot of people having this issue right now too. So
it's kind of weird because, well, I think like my friend base has grown exponentially since playing Helldivers. Like anybody I was playing with, and we was vibing, like going through objectives and all that stuff easy, like automatic friend request because I see them on all the time, and I might just join their squad. They might be in the middle of a firefight. They come see me, and then of course I got my boys too. And I haven't had an issue yet because I know I sent someone a friend request today. So when I was on a mission, I crashed. I don't know what happened, but I crashed. I'm like, damn, I ain't friends with none of the guys. And we was like mopping. We was getting
samples, getting busy.
We was putting in work. And so I immediately sent this guy a friend request, and I think he was on PlayStation, and it was like he jumped back, you know, it was on. So I haven't run across the issue yet, knock on wood. But typically, whenever there's an issue, they're on that shit. Like
that. But that's what I'm saying. Like I feel like they've been very responsive to the community in general. Like very like responsive, more so than most games that you see come out.
Yeah.
And in a positive way. It's not like Diablo where we were constantly like where the devs were constantly trying to do damage control. This is a good game, you know what I'm saying? And they know it's a good game, and they're just tweaking it. But like I've seen them address a whole bunch of different shit. I've yet to see them address that friend request bug. That and on Reddit, it, like a whole bunch of people are having that issue on Reddit, and I don't know what's up. It is pissing me off. But I know like the game just came out. I know it's probably just a bug. I know it's probably something that just got to fix real quick. And you know, it is what it is. But
man, so I got a message for these meta players.
You know, suck my sorry. Now let me stop.
It's around the same. Hey, listen, stop being a bitch. You know what I'm saying?
Quit being a bitch.
Like, yo, like, okay, it was a point where the meta was a railgun, shield, and a breaker shotgun. And if you didn't have any of those things, you was getting kicked.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, yo, the whole premise of this game is everybody united to play. Like, if you don't, like, get your ass, if you bitching and moaning about, bitching and moaning about the railgun getting nerfed and the shield getting nerfed or whatever, I'm like, okay, do you realize there's, like, several other stratagems you got?
Yes.
Several other drops? Like, what about this other shit over there? Like, go learn some shit. Get good,
exactly. And even shit that people don't even run with, like the smoke.
Yeah,
that shit is legit, bro. It doesn't do damage like that, but yo, when you're in an hairy situation, it blinds them, and they almost forget you even exist, bro.
Right.
You know, so like for extraction and shit like that, that shit is great to have for it. Or when you have an objective that you're trying to get to, and you got a horde coming,
yeah,
having that smoke is great.
Yeah, smoke, EMS. Like, because of that nerf, like, people are going to the art thrower now. And now people have been dying by the art thrower because they'll get in front of it.
Mm-hmm. People have been dying on that mech, too. That Patriot.
Yes.
People been getting fucked up on that Patriot, bro.
Hey, I'm doing work on that. Now, I played it a few times, and I do like the mech. Don't get me wrong. Speaking of which, I had an opportunity. What people don't realize, sometimes if you randomly quick play, you may run across playing with a game developer. And I played with a game developer earlier this week.
Oh, shit.
And didn't realize it. How did I know this? I found out the next day because it was talking about new drops that's supposed to be happening. I saw this cat drop a mech that was yellow. I'm like, what the hell is this? And he had nothing but rockets. It was no machine gun. It was all rockets. And the guy's avatar or girl's avatar was just sitting there looking at me, and I don't know I wasn't understanding because I was sitting there walking around and looking at it like what is this, yo? Like, what did I miss something?
Right, like, right.
So I'm tripping. And I saw him getting his mech, or her getting his mech, and I got in mine, and I was doing work. He or she was doing work, shooting nothing but rockets. It blew up, dropped it again. And I'm thinking that this developer was wanting people to jump in it, to test drive it, or whatever.
Yeah.
So developers are actually playing this game live, and you may run across some new shit by accident.
By accident.
And you test driving it. Someone saw a vehicle. Someone saw flying insects, because that's coming. Like flying in the air or whatever the case may be. Yeah, they on the way. They on the way, dog. And so after I found out the next day, that was one of the gaming developers. I was like,
"Damn, I fucked up. I should have gotten that motherfucker.
I should have got in it. We finished the mission, or whatever the case may be. But it was that is so dope though, because the people that are actually working on this game are actually playing this game with other people, including the head guy.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Like,
that shit is cool.
You know what I'm saying? Because in my mind. And you, like, tell me I'm lying. Anybody make a AAA title, we feel like they made a game and they moved on. Unless we bitch about it and then they have to do something to fix it. But yeah, they don't actually play the game with us live.
Right. That's true.
You know what I'm saying?
That's true. Not a lot of games do they do that.
Nah. Like, this is game of the year stuff. You know what I'm saying? Game of the year.
No doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt. I haven't played a game like this ever.
No, not at all. Not at all. For $40?
That's the crazy thing, bro. That's the crazy. It's a whole complete game that, I mean, they'll add to, but it's only $40. And for the DLC, for those premium packs, for those premium packs, bro, you don't even have to pay for it, bro.
No.
You just got to get the super creds. You could just earn it. For $40, they're not making no extra dough like that unless you're buying super creds.
Yeah.
But like, you don't have to. And I feel like most people just don't want to. You know what I mean? I bet you most people are tired of microtransactions. You know, most people are sick and tired of just having to pay to win.
Yeah.
And this game, not only do they give you the option, but they make that option like feasible.
Yeah. Attainable.
You know what I'm saying? Obtainable. Like, you could do it in like a reasonable amount of time. It's not like, damn, I'm gonna have to play this game for 3 months straight before I can save up enough to get this pack, which there'll be three more packs out by the time that I can get this one. It's not like that. You can earn those with like in a week, I'm sure, and then you can just go get it and then you'll be good.
If you ain't got nothing going on, like, you can. So here's the funky thing about it. The highest thing you can get as far as super creds may be like $20, which is nothing, right?
Is
even
nothing.
If you do that, it's nothing. And you get like a whole slew of super credits. You can
fuck
with.
Hell yeah.
You know what I'm saying? A thousand super credits is $10. And how much is the premium pack? $10, technically. But even if you unlock that by paying for it, you don't unlock everything. You still got to use your war bonds to buy certain things.
Exactly. And it's more
play the game.
And it's more expensive than the other ones too.
You're right. The very last page, you got to drop at least 280 war bonds to unlock the last page.
Yeah.
To get that shit. Like, I just now got the Scorcher from like the original package. Mm-hmm. I just now got that earlier this week.
Nice.
And how long this game been out? Maybe like 3 weeks or something like that. About 3 or 4 weeks, almost a month. So all those war bonds, man, because you max out in your bank a war bond 250. I didn't know that. So I tagged the developer or whatever. But then I found out later that's the cap. But here's the funky thing about it. All those matches I was in, earning war bonds, I'm thinking them shits are lost. No, they wasn't. So the minute I spent those war bonds that I had, when I came back to the game, it started out 45 war bonds, 8 war bonds, 10 war bonds. This is all the stuff I have earned after the
match. They just kept it on the side for you. They were just waiting for you to spend that whatever that you had of that 250, and they replenished whatever you had earned after that?
Right. I was like,
wow.
I'm like, yo, okay. So
Okay.
Because your max out of requisition points is 50,000. That's your max out. I don't think requisition points is the same way, because I think everybody that has, everybody at this point that have been playing the game day one got everything that they need from the requisition side for our stratagems. If you played it day one.
Oh yeah, you got all the, you probably got all the stratagems by then. But that's what I'm saying. Like, how could you amass 50,000 acquisition points? Like, why would you save that many up unless you just bought everything already?
So you bought everything. But also, like, if you're playing on Helldive, you're gonna time the requisition points by 250.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So it's gonna be
yeah.
like 1,000. So I mean, you can accumulate that stuff easily if you're in like the hardest difficulty, because the higher the difficulty, the higher your points you get.
I haven't broke medium, bro.
Oh, it get yo. Just you keep going.
I haven't broke medium yet.
Because
I'm still trying to get those samples. I'm still trying to get my my ship right.
That's the bread and butter right there. The samples, that is the bread and butter. Like do not sleep on those. Those requisition points, you can always get those. That's easy. That's easy stuff. Super credits and samples, those are ones that you got to really look out for. The super rare and the rare joints and the commons, you know, that's where you live. That's where you live.
Pay attention to those little question marks that are on your,
on the map,
on your compass. So you can, because once you get into those bunkers, typically they have acquisition points, bonds, samples or super
ammo,
credits,
grenades, stems,
a new gun
or something like that. You gotta do that, man.
Don't sleep. You gotta do it. You gotta close all the holes up, bro. You gotta do all of that, man. Finish it up. I can't. If we extract it and we leave a couple holes open, dude, I'm kind of mad.
I'm low key. I am too. Now if we dying too much and I'm looking at that respawn count, just keep on going down.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right, we gotta cut our losses.
Yeah.
We gotta get to the point. You know,
no
doubt. Them freaking stalkers, man. Them stalkers. Let me tell you,
bro.
Those stalkers and those bile spores. I hate them. With
you can't do
passion.
That. Oh, you like those what did you call them? Not the bile spores. No, not those. The
stalkers.
Stalkers, bro.
Yeah, that's invisible. Yeah.
They slow, man. Them, and I think it's the hunters.
Yeah, don't get caught up in between that, because anytime you get swiped,
hunters,
slow down.
Bro, you get like 5 hunters on your ass, bro. They start slowing you down. They start jumping on you, bro. You, that's it, bro.
It's over for you. Just throw a grenade and, you know, call it.
Yeah, we got to link up though. We got to play that shit.
No doubt. Yeah, we definitely gonna get in that. If to the meta users, man, listen, man, just get good. Like, play with other shit.
Yeah, bro.
You know what I'm saying?
Eat a dick.
Well, it, easily.
Eat a dick. Easily.
Like, get good, man. Like the rail gun isn't nerfed because if you take it off a safe mode and go unsafe, just measure it at the right point and then shoot. And I love the game regardless, no matter how many times I die in the game. And I don't think like these meta users don't understand the premise of this game. You are fodder. The game tells you, you are an extra. You're not the main character. You are the regular ninja
fodder
in the great ninja war in Naruto. You are them.
Yeah.
That's what we are. We are expendable.
We're expendable, bro. And it's crazy, man, seeing everything happen in real time. Seeing people come down on their pods in real time, seeing some of these beacons coming down in real time, watching the ships get destroyed in real time, like that shit is cool. Seeing the liberation percentage changing in real time, I ain't seen nothing like it,
bro. Hellmire, that planet.
I ain't been to Hellmire yet.
Not many people's on it because that's not part of the event that's going on right now. But on the, so you got those the yellow bar here for the planet. The first two bars, we already liberated two already. Termicide already done that. We got two more planets to do. I think we're going to finish that before the event day is over, because everybody's jumping on. Also, in the story, it's saying that Termicide is somehow, in some cases, mutating these Terminus. So we may see a new.
Just like you said, enemy. Like some of them are flying, which is cool. I mean, which sucks because like that's an extra layer of shit that you got to defend. But also that adds space for different stratagems and different ways to get rid of them, different weapons to have some kind of air defense.
Yeah. I mean, you got the rover drone, which I love that. I love the rover drone.
The dog, jetpack, yeah.
I'll be like, let me fly out of here right quick. Also, the cool thing about it before we get off is the main actor for Starship Troopers, Casper Van Dien, he been tweeting the CEO of Arrowhead. He was like, I'm ready to do my part. I was like, yo, this is, he was like, this
okay.
Is, he said, this is dope. He like, I love, you know, I think he gave some kind of praise to the game. And I know, obviously, what if they do like a skin, like a Starship Trooper skin, the voice actors for Starship Troopers, Neil Patrick Harris and Diz, you know, all these characters. Boy, let me tell
you. That shit would be cool, bro.
If you go to microtransaction me, give me that shit. You know what I'm saying? I ain't gonna be mad at it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But knowing how Arrowhead works, they're gonna give it to us. You know, you're just gonna have to earn it. And I'm pretty sure they had to wrestle with that before they had to release this game. But they had no clue this game was gonna be as successful as it is, considering how the last game was.
Facts.
Only like 5,000-7,000 people was playing last game. Now look at it.
It's just crazy reviews, overwhelmingly positive.
Yeah. Hellmire, what I was saying earlier, has fire tornadoes.
Damn.
It's fire tornadoes. It's like swirling flamethrowers on planet. So when you see that little thing come across your screen, says incoming weather or whatever, you might want to get off ground, because those tornadoes are coming. I mean, you can see the tornadoes like 1, 2, 3, even the ones in the distance swirling.
Yeah.
Scorching the ground. And like killing whatever's on the ground. You can hear screams and bugs and all that. It's freaking wild.
And they move fast?
Yes. It moves like a regular tornado, but it's like like fire. It's crazy. I'm going to send you the screenshot. It's wild. And I want to go on that planet just to see it.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
And, you know, and I want to take the jetpack and I'll just fly next to it, just toss that. You know, just
hell do something crazy. Yeah. I'm with it. That sounds like fun. I haven't seen that yet. I'm going to look it up too. Hellmire.
Hellmire, yeah. Hellmire. That's the planet. That's the planet. It's like perfect. By itself. So, but guys, that's our show for today, man.
Good show. That was a good show.
It really was, man. We was super hyped about this thing, man.
Super hyped. Rest in peace, Akira Toriyama.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you for the memories.
Yes.
Akira Toriyama. Thank you for your hard work and dedication, because a manga artist's work should always be well respected, because a lot of people don't even know how hard that profession is. Like,
passionate, bro. You did great, bro. The best. That was great.
If you really want to know how hard like a manga artist's life is, like from back in the day, watch Bakuman. Bakuman. It's on Hulu. It will let you know right off. It's an anime too, but it will let you know the hard life of a manga artist. It'll let you know right out the gate.
Word up.
So, got anything else for the listeners before we get out of here?
Bro, I hope everybody has great, safe weekend. I hope to catch y'all motherfuckers on Helldivers.
Yes.
If y'all are players of Helldivers, we want to play with y'all. We want to get on with y'all. We want to just have fun, man. So if y'all are ever on, let us know. And Urse, like, I know you got a whole bunch of friends too, so let's get it.
Hey, we in there. We in there like
Sunday, we in there. Yes, sir.
So until next time, y'all.
Peace.